This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 18th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Around the Rim, Pacific Rim news headlines. Cascadia Calling, Pacific Northwest news headlines. The Big Deal feature, a salute to Canadian football on the road to the Grey Cup, with John Valentine, assistant professor at McEwen University in Edmonton. He talks about the state of the CFL versus the NFL. And two-time Grey Cup winning center Angus Reid talks about his new book. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or did a majority of Calgary voters do the right thing on November 13th by voting against a bid for the 2026 Winter Olympics? 56% of voters in the plebiscite prevented the Games from returning to the 1988 host city. The real estate and tourism industries were disappointed. I have covered five Olympic Games, and the Games have become more of a promotion for real estate and tourism than sport. But Calgarians will not be stuck with higher taxes and a more expensive cost of living, which is what happened after Vancouver 2010. Since Calgary 1988, the Olympics have become bigger, more expensive, and more controversial. Revelations of corruption run rampant. Calgary was hoping to become a model for International Olympic Committee reform by reusing many of the same venues left over from 1988, although ski jumping was going to take place at the 2010 Winter Olympics venue near Whistler. The Calgary bid foolishly did not say where the main athletes' village would be built. Vancouverites know full well that the Olympic Village is the most troublesome venue of them all. The $1.1 billion Southeast Falls Creek complex needed a City Hall bailout when the Great Recession hit in 2008 and the Wall Street financier walked away. Before the end of 2010, it was put into receivership. No government stood behind Calgary and agreed to take responsibility for cost overruns. The security budget for 2026 was half of what Vancouver's was for 2010. It did not seem realistic. The Alberta Finance Minister's pledge to put an organizing committee under freedom of information was too vague, especially in a province where citizens must pay $25 for each FOI request, and the Information Commissioner herself says the system is almost in crisis. The Notley NDP government has done nothing to improve transparency. Simply put, the citizens of Calgary looked beyond the benefits sold by the bid boosters and realized that the costs and the risks were too great to put their city's future in the hands of the IOC. The IOC needed Calgary more than Calgary needed the IOC. Now the lords of sport cast their eyes at Stockholm, Sweden, and Milan, Italy, hoping those cities stay in the race. The 2026 host will be picked on June 23rd, 2019. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Los Angeles Times, Andrew Corey reports, "For California fire victims, it will be a long, tough road to rebuild. The fires that tore through California in the last week have reduced homes to ash, upending lives, and leaving thousands in a sudden need of shelter. But beyond the immediate challenges of finding a place to live in a state with perpetual shortage of housing, property owners could face a number of challenges in trying to rebuild. Construction workers are in short supply. The cost of some materials are rising, thanks in part to President Trump's trade war. In all, the still-burning wildfires in Northern and Southern California have destroyed more than 12,800 structures, swelling shelters and raising questions about whether it's smart to rebuild in areas prone to wildfires." In the South China Morning Post, Brian Galvin reports, "From nuclear fusion to human gene splicing, five Chinese tech innovations that could have a negative impact. Five innovations that might just set back human advancement if not thoroughly researched and investigated." Artificial sun. through experimental nuclear fusion technology. According to Chinese state media, the fusion reactor reached temperatures of 100 million degrees Celsius, which is about 7 times hotter than the interior of the sun. Human genome editing. In 2015, Chinese scientists were the first in the world to modify genes of human embryos. Fake news anchors. Chinese state news agency Xinhua unveiled the world's first artificial intelligence news anchor. Bike sharing. The first company to roll off the cliff was Xiaoming, which dumped 430,000 bikes throughout more than 10 cities in China. Enormous mounds of discarded and broken bicycles then started piling up all around the country as more of the companies went bankrupt. Social credit systems. Chinese telecom giant ZTE is helping Venezuela to create a similar system to monitor its citizens via a new identification card system, suggestively named the Fatherland Card. This is the first real example of analysts' concerns that China's use of the controversial social credit system would spread to other countries. And in El Universal, Alejandro Orellana reports, reasons why Mexico does not fulfill the NFL standards. The state of the playing field at the Azteca Stadium in Mexico City forced the National Football League to move the match between the Rams and Chiefs to Los Angeles, but this has not been the only incident related to Mexico. In 2016, the game between the Texans and Raiders was overshadowed by the homophobic "A-Fag" chant. Someone pointed a laser at quarterback Brock Osweiler, and signs were transformed into paper airplanes. In 2017, fans complained about the quick sellout of the New England Patriots versus Oakland Raiders game after the majority of tickets were bought by banking sponsor Banorte. Tickets quickly appeared on StubHub at higher prices. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. In the Bellingham Herald, Dave Gallagher reports, with Painfield nearly ready for commercial flights, how will it impact Bellingham? Alaska Airlines' plan to start its 18 daily flights out of Everett likely will impact traffic at Bellingham International Airport, but officials here are trying to attract more destinations, including Mexico, for local and Canadian travelers. The Alaska flights out of Everett will be to 8 western U.S. cities: Las Vegas, Phoenix, Los Angeles, Portland, San Francisco, San Jose, San Diego, and Orange County, California. Local and Canadian passengers make up most of Bellingham's market. After years of decreasing numbers because of a weakening Canadian dollar, Bellingham's passenger numbers have stabilized this year. According to data collected by the Port of Bellingham, more than 313,000 people took flights out of the Bellingham Airport through October, about 1,000 more than the same period in 2017. In the Oregonian, Everton Bailey Jr. reports, Oregon man accused of lying about drive-by shooting after accidentally shooting phone. A Lincoln City man told police a stranger drove up to him on the street and shot a cell phone out of his hand, but he actually destroyed the device himself and grazed his nose when he accidentally fired a handgun while in his bedroom, authorities say. It took 2 days for Isaiah Padron, 20, to admit to investigators there was no drive-by shooting, and the man who he claimed fired on him at random while driving a black four-door sedan did not exist, according to a probable cause affidavit. It was after Lincoln City police confronted him about a reported stolen gun found in his bedroom, the court papers said. And in the Nanaimo News, deer carcasses don't belong in green bin. The city of Nanaimo's waste collection system does not accept deer carcasses. The municipality advised residents of that guideline earlier this week after it was discovered last week that someone had put a deer carcass in their green bin, said David Thompson, city manager of Sanitation, Recycling, and Public Works Administration. The fur and the skin is not compostable. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
We'll see you down at the football game, see you in the crowd, and we're gonna cheer our team this year till there ain't no cheering as loud. And someone down at the football game says, hey, why do you scream? We're gonna realize when we get the prize, we've been waking up the Grey Cup team. Waking up the Grey Cup team.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It's the best time of year for football fans. The Canadian Football League is nearing its climax. The Grey Cup in Edmonton is November 25th. Canadian U Sports College Football is nearing its climax. The Vanier Cup is November 24th in Laval, Quebec. National Football League teams are jockeying for playoff spots, and NCAA football teams are jockeying for invitations to the best bowl games. On this edition, I speak with Professor John Valentine from McEwen University in Edmonton. John Valentine was a speaker at the North American Society for the Sociology of Sport convention in Vancouver in early November on the topic of the NFL's invasion of Canada, growth and resistance.
In the 1950s, the Canadian game, the CFL, was quite strong, and it started to attract and steal some terrific players from the American college system as soon as they graduated. 53, 54, some of those years. One year you had four of the top 10 draft choices in the NFL draft all deciding to come up to Canada. You had Billy Vessels winning the Heisman Trophy and coming up to Canada. So what started to happen back then in the 50s was the CFL was trying to attract American attention so that American players would come up here and American college coaches would be happy to send their players up to Canada. And it's surprising as it may be today, in the 1950s, it was quite common for the CFL to pay American players more than those players would make in the NFL. So then in the 1960s, the NFL sort of recognized that there was more interest in Canada, and I think the NFL started to realize that if they grew the game internationally, they could become much more profitable. And so the natural market to look at is Canada. There's no language barrier. There was a Canadian game similar to the American football game. And so the NFL negotiated TV contracts with CBC and CTV. So it became quite common for football fans in Canada to start to watch the NFL being played on television. And at first, there was not much interest in the NFL game. In fact, in 1960, there was an exhibition game of NFL football in Toronto, and there was less than 5,000 fans that showed up. But eventually, with the NFL marketing arm trying to persuade Canadians to start watching the American game, and certainly the Canadian population was very accustomed to consuming American culture, American music, American movies, American television, radio, magazines, news, everything. And so eventually, the market turned, and some Canadians became more interested in consuming the NFL, and that occurred right through the 1960s into the 1970s.
Polls have shown that the CFL remains popular for fans over 40, but the NFL is popular for those under 40. Is it the showbiz factor that makes the NFL more popular?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. The NFL is much more of a spectacle than the Canadian game is. The marketing is better. There's more teams. There's more games. So if you see a half an hour highlight reel of the American game, well, you might be watching the best highlights from 12, 13, 14 games. Whereas in the CFL, some weeks they've got three games, and so there's not going to be as many highlights. It's not going to look as fantastic. And I think also the younger demographic in Canada are much more open to global culture than the older demographic, because you're exactly right. I mean, the CFL fan skews older, and the NFL fan in Canada is much more likely to be the younger crowd. And I think this younger demographic in Canada, which is often a multicultural demographic, they're not necessarily so interested in, or they don't seem to be as interested in saying, well, you know what, this is Canadian culture, so I'm going to watch this. They don't really care where it's coming from. All they want is to be entertained. And if the NFL has a slick, polished, packaged program that looks great and it's marketed as a spectacle, that seems to have had some success in Canada.
There is the cross-border football shopping trend. British Columbians, for instance, are going south to see the Seahawks in Seattle. That is coming at the expense of the CFL, as the BC Lions crowd has dwindled to below 20,000.
mentioned, you know, Toronto, there's lots of people in the GTA area that happily will drive the short distance to watch the Buffalo Bills and totally ignore the Toronto Argonauts or the Hamilton Ticats playing in the same things going on and with people from BC going down to Seattle. So that you have this cross-border phenomenon taking place, and it started in the 1960s. There was a commissioner of the CFL. They hired a marketing research team to look at the CFL, and they concluded in 1966 that the biggest problem that the CFL had at that time was the NFL, and that more and more people were consuming the American game on TV or any other way they could, starting back then in the 60s, and even more so today. And it's very easy now to, I mean, you talked about geographically, there's lots of fans close to Seattle or close to Buffalo or Detroit, but with the internet and with news groups and with social media, it's easier than ever to consume that American content, not only in certain geographic regions, but all across the country, and as we talked about at the conference, all around the world. So, you know, you've got some success from the NFL having some of these games in London. I know one was just canceled that's coming up in Mexico, but the NFL's had lots of success in Mexico as well. So with technology, you don't even need to be geographically close to those teams to follow them.
The Grey Cup will be on TSN and online, whereas the Super Bowl will be on CTV's network, and more Canadians will watch the Super Bowl than the Grey Cup. Is it time that the government encouraged the Grey Cup to be carried on network TV?
Yeah, you raised a lot of great points there. It was about 10 years ago was the first time that Canadians, a little more than 10 years ago, that more Canadians watched the Super Bowl in Canada than watched the Grey Cup. A couple of interesting things about that. The majority of the people in Canada who are watching the Super Bowl come from around Vancouver and the Toronto area, of course, which is, you know, a big chunk of the population. But on the prairies, you know, the Grey Cup still draws more than the Super Bowl does. So that's one of the changes. But and the other thing I was going to say about the majority, the highest TV viewership in Canada is actually not during the game, but it's during the halftime show. So I think that speaks also to what thing we've talked about is the spectacle aspect of the Super Bowl. People want to see the musical act, they want to see the laser show, the fireworks and all that sort of stuff. And that seems to draw, and so it may be that you have more people wanting to watch the spectacle than actually more football fans wanting to watch the football game. But and you mentioned a good point about, you know, the CFL for 50 years, the Grey Cup was on CBC, and then TSN stepped in and spent a lot of money to buy the CFL rights. And I think that it's probably, although the, you know, the TV contract's gonna be up in a few years from now, but I my expectation would be that it would stay on TSN and that we won't have the government stepping in and the CBC spending lots and lots of money, because TSN is able to give CFL football higher profile and more attention than the CBC ever would. You have pregame shows and postgame shows, and you have shows during the week, and you have lots of extras that TSN has used to help try and market the CFL. And the CFL has enjoyed, you know, a rise, I think, in certain markets. There's more interest based on the extra attention that TSN has given the league. So my understanding was that the last time the TV contract was up, the CFL didn't even allow CBC to bid, and that may be what we'll see the next time as well.
Football is facing demographic shifts in Vancouver and Toronto, where fewer high schools are offering football. The health and safety of players, the concussion issue, is causing parents to think twice about registering their kids.
The concussion issue has come up, and I think that also speaks to the attention that Canadians give the American media. There was a Canadian study that found that the rate of concussions is 3 to 4 times higher in hockey than it is in football. But still, we see more Canadians seem to be concerned about head injuries in football than concerned about head injuries in hockey. And the leagues have responded to this medical concern, this health concern. I've read that for the first time ever in the United States this year, there are more people playing flag football than are playing tackle football. And we've seen the league and in Canada, the CFL, start to promote more flag football opportunities for young boys as well as young girls. And that's happening at the provincial level as well, that there's a lot of provincial organizations that run football in, say, Ontario or Quebec, BC, Alberta, and they're starting to push more flag football. And I know in Alberta, it's now in the school system, that just like you have competitive basketball and volleyball in the school systems, now you have competitive flag football. So they're trying to grow the game. There's lots of challenges, as you correctly have pointed out. I just read that the NFL TV ratings, after having declined for the past few years, related to, you know, health concerns and things like that, this year they're up a little bit, so the NFL seems to be having a pretty good year. But that's a huge issue that the CFL, NFL, all of football is going to have to try and combat. Otherwise, you lose the people who are, you know, you lose your participants, and it's pretty tough to grow the game in the future if you don't have anybody playing it.
That was John Valentine, professor from McEwen University in Edmonton. Next, I talked to Angus Reid, the two-time Grey Cup winning center with the BC Lions. Angus Reid is a product of the Vancouver College Fighting Irish and Simon Fraser University clan. He is the author of the new book, Thank You Coach, Learning How to Live by Being Taught How to Play. It's available from Amazon. Offensive line coach Dan D'Orazio was really your mentor.
Yes, 100%. I mean, I played 13 years professional, and I had Dan as my offensive line coach for 11 straight years of that journey. And I think most people can realize how rare that is to have the same positional coach for 11 continuous seasons. And so Dan really, he really taught me everything I know about how to play football at the high level. But what made this story worth telling was, now that I've retired for a few years, I'm realizing in doing so, he really taught me almost everything I need to know about how to go about living my life.
What was the biggest lesson that Dan taught you?
The power of building trust and what that means on a daily basis in terms of working with people, communicating with them, being honest and being accountable for what you're supposed to do. And in doing so, you become a dependable player. And I realized that becoming a dependable player or a dependable person separates you from all the other people out there that might just have talent. Because in the world of football, just like in any other business or any other area in life, talent kind of becomes not the issue at all if trust isn't there. And if you're able to build trust properly by doing what you said you're going to do, giving everything you had, and showing up every single day no matter what, you become someone of value, and you become someone that can be relied on, and you become somebody that pretty much anyone would want to work with.
Dan D'Orazio came to BC under another Italian coach, Wally Buono, the winningest coach in CFL history, who just retired. What did Wally Buono teach you about life and about football?
Well, Wally taught me that professional football is a business, and there's a big gap between amateur football and pro sports. And I learned very quickly that, you know, what your job here is at the pro level is to bring value and help a team win. And as long as you can do that, you have a job. And if you can't do that anymore, it doesn't matter how much Wally might like you or people might like you, you won't have a job. And that may sound cold, but it really was a comforting reality to understand exactly where you stood and exactly what it meant and what was required to make it as a pro football player. Bring enough to the table that helps the team win, and you'll be employed, you'll have a job. And Wally was very good at staying objective, removing emotion from his decisions and from his ability to guide us, and always reminding us of the things that matter most to winning and making sure we stay focused on that and not getting lost in, being upset or being angry or being too happy in any given moment, staying on task and making sure we were always doing what mattered most in the moment to keep us winning.
You have learned from some of the best in the business. Would you become a coach?
Not at the professional level. You know, I part of the reason why I think I wrote Thank You Coach was to really just flat out thank Dan for how much he gave to us as players. And I'm talking, you know, in terms of time allotment. Dan, I say it in the book, I mean, he started his day at 2:30 every morning to get to the office, to do the work required to prepare us for our games. And I don't think I could do that. I really don't think I could commit that much of my life to coaching a sport. Now, I love the sport of football, and I do love helping improve people's lives. So I could see myself, and I am involved in the amateur level, coaching kids, helping young guys, kind of figure things out and empowering them to make it in life. But at the pro level, I really don't think I could do what those guys do.
Football is the ultimate team sport, but it's a game that's in flux. There are fewer high schools offering football, and parents are having second thoughts about putting their kids at risk of concussions. What do you think of the future of the game?
I don't know for sure, but I know the sport needs to adapt and evolve, and I believe it's doing that to address fears and concerns, which I believe it's doing everything it can right now to not hide from the issues that people are concerned with. You know, obviously concussion is the big word right now. It's become the boogeyman. It's become the fear for mom and dad at home to keep little Johnny out of football. And I believe now that football is addressing it and doing what it can to make sure the sport is played as safe as it can be without losing what the sport really is all about, which is it's a tough sport. It's a hard sport. And it is a contact sport. I mean, if you remove that, you remove the game and you remove a lot of the benefits. So it's adapting, improving, but still maintaining that balance between making the sport as safe as possible while not losing the things that keep it unique and distinct from other sports where, you know, it's a sport that requires toughness, it develops it, and it makes people become a little comfortable being uncomfortable every day in life because it's hard. And that, to me, is one of the greatest aspects of the sport, along with the fact that, as you said, it's the greatest team sport because it has the most people participating for one common goal where everybody is bringing what they can to the table so everybody else can win in an environment that's very hard to do and that requires daily commitment. Those, to me, Bob, are all things that equate and transfer to the rest of your life. So we need this sport. It's a great teaching tool, but we do always have to make sure that we are improving it and then making sure that we are doing everything we can to make it as safe as possible.
That was Angus Reid, a member of two BC Lions Grey Cup winning teams in 2006 and 2011. His new book is called Thank You, Coach, Learning How to Live by Being Taught How to Play, and it's available from Amazon. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people who make a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Wally Buono, who retired last week as coach of the BC Lions after almost a decade and a half. Buono hoisted two Grey Cups as a linebacker and punter with the Montreal Alouettes, another three Grey Cups as the coach of the Calgary Stampeders, and two more as the coach of the BC Lions in 2006 and 2011. He's the winningest coach in Canadian Football League history. Enjoy the time with your family, Wally, and a memo to the BC Lions organization. Find a way to hire Wally as a part-time goodwill ambassador. His passion for the game and dedication to the community are invaluable. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 18th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 18th in 1993, more than 20 political parties endorsed a new constitution in South Africa? They abolished apartheid, the system of white minority rule, and they expanded civil rights to all. Among the leaders who shook hands that day were President F.W. de Klerk, and future President Nelson Mandela, the freed political prisoner who led the African National Congress. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.